Talkback with Gary Null, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Broadcasting live from my studio in New York City. Also streaming video live over the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Have a lot to share with you today. Dr. Martin Feldman will be joining us near the end of the program to give us challenging medical myths. I have several commentaries, and I would like your feedback. I'm going to talk about the overprescribing of psychoactive drugs to children, a scourge of our time, by Dr. Ronald Riker and Dr. Venice Nicolino. I'll also be talking about progressives, and there are many, must start to agitate. Julianne Poirier. Also, Western civilization has shed many of its values, according to Paul Craig Roberts. Those are all important issues. From our environmental section, I'm going to talk about the Food Safety Modernization Act and the U.S. government's assault on food freedom. You've heard me talk about Senate Bill 510 and why I'm opposed to it. We've given you all the rationale for it. I have multiple arguments, documented and detailed. Well, the fight is still not over, so I'm going to ask you to go to GaryNull.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, look at the arguments, read them, but I'll give you a commentary from Randy Ananda also. Let us begin. We have a full hour, and there will be time for your calls. Almost everyone brushes their teeth after each meal, where they should. Now, hopefully people are not using the fluoride toothpaste, and hopefully they're looking at the ingredients, making sure they're doing the right job to their teeth. Well, new information from the University of Florida shows that toothpaste and soaps contain a chemical that can leave unborn babies brain damaged. This is the latest. They fear pregnant women who are exposed to high levels of the chemical called triclosan, T-R-I-C-L-O-S-A-N, may be putting their babies at risk. Alarming new findings suggesting that triclosan, a powerful antibacterial that was developed nearly 50 years ago, may disrupt the flow of blood to the uterus, starving a baby's brain of oxygen that it needs in early development. Quote, we know it's a problem, but we just didn't know how much of a problem. That's according to Professor Margaret James, University of Florida. It's commonly used in toothpaste, deodorants, hand washes, to washing up liquid antibacterial chopping boards, and even on toys. And you want to know the reality of it? I never used that stuff because I knew what was in it. Plain old soap and water does just as good. And not only that, but you should always just use wooden cutting blocks because they have natural antibacterial action rather than plastic. One of those glass that a lot of people think are very hip because they come in different colors, but just a wooden cutting block. And also, if you have in the air around you, especially if you're a school teacher, and I was sharing this with school teachers just last week. I've lectured in two schools in New Jersey just last week. I said, in between each class, for about maybe 60 seconds, walk around a room and spray as high as you can hold your arm, pump about every second, air therapy from oranges or lemons. Because the citrus peel, the lemon peel and the orange peel contain natural antiviral and natural antibacterial agents. And it will help clear the air, purify the air, of any of the bacteria or viruses that students may have had that would otherwise be contaminating it. Then get one of the students to take a paper towel and just soak it in alcohol, plain old isopropyl rubbing alcohol, and wipe down the desks. it takes maybe for a whole room of 30 desks, it would take maybe 2 minutes. You've just gotten rid of all of the contact viruses and bacteria because they're killed on contact when you agitate the surface with alcohol. And by the way, in your own home, taking a wet paper towel, wet from alcohol, and wiping down doorknobs, refrigerators, wiping the telephone, wiping it around the bathroom, you're going to minimize the opportunity for viruses to create the colds and the flu that would otherwise happen. Simple things. And don't use any more of those antibacterial soaps. I repeat, do not use them. They have a chemical that is extremely dangerous. Simple soap and water. Dr. Bronner's soap, that would be a good one. It's been around a long time. None of those chemicals, but it does the dry job. Next up, I'm hopeful that you enjoy tomatoes and salads, or tomato juice, tomato in sauces. Here's the reason why you should have it. University of Illinois research scientists have found that eating tomatoes reduces the risk of prostate cancer, and they develop a tool that can help trace the metabolism of tomato, help your metabolism when you eat a tomato. And quote, scientists believe that carotenoids, which are the pigments that give the red, yellow, and orange colors to some fruits, have cancer preventative benefits, and they're really strong in tomatoes. This is according to Professor John Erdman, University of Illinois. So that's good news. Just use more tomatoes. And they've isolated not just lycopene, but now phytoene and phytofluene. These are new antioxidants and chemicals, and they're finding even more. So that's all good. Tomatoes. Well, the Institute of Medicine report on vitamin D is in error. I reported at length on this on my daily show, and I just want to reemphasize this, that for those of you who are concerned because you read the New York Times article that said that vitamin D, we don't have a deficiency and it could be dangerous, they are wrong. In the amounts that the average American adult and child and senior citizens are consuming, we are deficient. We are not getting enough by at least one full measure. All of us who are actually qualified, clinical, licensed, board-certified clinicians in the field know full well that between 2,000 to 4,000 units a day of vitamin D is what you see is best for prevention. For treatment, it goes up much higher. So when they've been telling us for decades that you only need 200 units or 300 units, they were so off the mark. And yet, just like the economists that didn't see the housing bubble, didn't see the dot-com bubble, and continue to be the experts today when they shouldn't be, the so-called health authorities that told us we didn't need but a tiny amount of vitamin C, they were wrong. We didn't need but 1 to 3 milligrams of B1, 2, and 6, they were wrong. That vitamins weren't important, there are 500,000 studies from peer-reviewed journals showing they were wrong. They've been wrong about everything. We've been right about everything. So they are wrong on this. Now, it doesn't surprise me the New York Times, which never, ever have I seen do detailed work and actually do some scholarship, should have gotten this right. They relied upon the Institute of Medicine, a highly politicized organization, that told them that people need a small amount of vitamin D. The actual clinical studies, which are now up on our website, to prove they're wrong, to prove the Institute of Medicine's wrong, to prove the New York Times and all the other journals who followed their lead are wrong, it took us under 1 hour to find over 50 studies, major peer-reviewed studies, showing the enormous amount of Americans who are deficient, and then the good that comes when you're using vitamin D at higher doses that I suggested, from dementia, Alzheimer's, heart disease, cancer, allergies, inflammation, across the board, it benefits you. That's all good. Now, one more study here to show you how bad antibacterial soaps are. This comes from mainstream science, Science Daily. I'll quote it. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal of Hepatology, the Journal of the American Association for the Study of Liver Disease. Quote, new research shows that antimicrobial medications are a common cause of drug-induced liver injury, the leading cause of acute liver failure for women and minorities disproportionately affected. And it says that it evolves gradually. And, quote, full findings of this 10-year prospective study are published in the peer-reviewed journal, Patients with Liver Failure, resulting from, again, this is drug, a common cause of drug-induced liver injury. They end up experiencing jaundice, fluid retention, advanced coma, and more than 1,100 drugs that are on the market now are known to cause liver injury. So, before you take any medication, check the physician's desk reference and ask yourself, are there any citations that this will cause liver injury? We weren't even told that these medications would destroy your liver. But when your liver is adversely affected, how are you going to detoxify the body? How are you going to metabolize nutrients? Both will be difficult. But it wouldn't be if you knew in advance and found another way of helping your body without taking a drug that damaged the liver. Also, for any individuals, but this study was about older adults, this is from the Department of Sociology at a University of Surrey, and it says, older people who take an afternoon nap are leading more active lives, and they're not as fatigued, they have more energy. Quote, sleep is central to health and well-being, but as people get older, the quality of their sleep can deteriorate. They shouldn't feel guilty or think themselves lazy for having a nap. The new research also found that as older people often have more disturbed sleep patterns at night, they try to avoid taking a nap during the day, only to fall asleep watching television during the earlier evening. As a result, they may end up feeling exhausted. So my suggestion, give yourself a 15-minute to a half-hour nap at some point between noon and 4 o'clock, and you'll have a lot more energy and you'll feel more rested, and that would be great. And finally, on health and nutrition, if we want to reduce the risk of colorectal cancer by 25%, according to the British Medical Journal and Science Daily, quote, almost a quarter of colorectal bowel cancer cases could be prevented if people simply followed a healthy lifestyle, including a good healthy diet, that's the Mediterranean diet, and exercise. Researchers from Denmark found that by following these recommendations, by not having the alcohol, by not having a fat belly, by having a good diet, that you had an enormous chance to prevent having colorectal cancer. And those are easy things to do. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Noll. We have a lot to talk about, and we'll be going to all these different issues in short order. There's some things that were found in actual court documents, and I thought you would find them interesting. These actually are from transcripts. Attorney What was the first thing your husband said to you this morning? Witness, he said, where am I, Kathy? Attorney, and why did that upset you? Witness, my name is Susan. Attorney, what gear were you in at the moment of the impact? Witness, Gucci sweats and Reeboks. Attorney, this myasthenia gravis, does it affect your memory at all? Witness, yes. And in what way does it affect your memory? Witness, I forget. Attorney, you forget. Can you give us an example of something you forgot? Let's see. Attorney, now, doctor, is it true that when a person dies in his sleep, he doesn't know about it until the next morning? Witness, did you actually pass your bar exam? Attorney, the youngest son, the 20-year-old, how old is he? Witness, he's 20, much like your IQ. Attorney, were you present when your picture was taken? Witness, you're an idiot. Attorney, she had three children, right? Witness, yes. Attorney, and how many were boys? Witness, none. Attorney, were there any girls? Witness, Your Honor, I think I need a different attorney. Can I get a new attorney? Attorney, how was your first marriage terminated? Witness, by death. Attorney, and by whose death was it terminated? Witness, take a guess. Attorney, you describe this individual, can you? Witness, he was about medium height and had a beard. Attorney, was this a male or female? Witness, unless the circus was in town, it was a male. Attorney, doctor, how many of your autopsies have been performed on dead people? Witness, all of them. The lives went up too much of a fight. Attorney, all your responses must be oral, okay? Now, what school did you go to? Witness, oral. Attorney, are you qualified? Attorney, before you performed the autopsy, did you check for a pulse? Witness, no. Would you check for blood pressure? Witness, no. Did you check for breathing? No. So then is it possible the patient was alive when you began the autopsy? No. Well, how can you be so sure, doctor? Because his brain was sitting on my desk in a jar. Attorney, I see, but could the patient still be alive nevertheless? Yes, it's possible he could have been alive and practicing law, like you. And so he goes, God. Now, a couple commentaries, and I'm going to ask you to call in and share your thoughts on some of these issues that I think are very important. First, a thought on the Food Modernization Act. This is really about who was paid money by Monsanto. And by the way, we now have a list of all the people who were given money, all the legislators, and how much they were given per person. And you can look at every single one of the people who received money, and you'll see exactly where they voted. And we're going into their backgrounds in depth on an upcoming show. This is from Randy Ananda from Global Research. The voice of controlled opposition wants America to believe that the Tester Amendment to Senate Bill 510, the Food Safety Modernization Act, elevates the bill to something we should adopt. The Tester Amendment puts a Band-Aid on a head wound. It does not stop the most lethal agency in American history from seizing control of the food supply from farm to fork. Even though Big Agra now opposes Senate Bill 510, we should continue to oppose the bill, as it amounts to a federal assault on food freedom. Agribusiness giants have always opposed the exemption provided in the Tester Amendment. Now that's to include in the current form of Senate Bill 510, they're only making clear that they oppose giving any wiggle room to competition. But from their sudden opposition to Senate Bill 510, because it now includes an amendment that they've always opposed, the public is being lulled into a false sense of confidence about the bill. And by the way, all it does is give $500,000 a year that you would not have to abide by all the rules. But then again, how could you possibly, unless you're a farmer, as I am, an organic certified farmer, $500,000 a year in gross income is not a lot. Your cost is over 70%. And that means that you would have a relatively small amount of money left over. And yet you would have to have an enormous amount of equipment, and it would put all the small farmers out of business. So here's what is in this bill. It does not address the real causes of food safety issues stemming from the centralized industrialized food supply chain. It ensures that international trade agreements have supremacy over local laws. It destroys states' rights to define a culturally appropriate legal platform under which food is produced and distributed. It transfers authority over food regulation enforcement from the FDA to the Department of Homeland Security, which brought in the liberty-killing TSA, which disastrously handled the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, the Homeland Security did. And it extends a failed and destructive Homeland Security to all food oversight, thus threatening to do to the local food production and farming what it has done in other areas. Anyhow, we're opposed to Senate Bill 510. I ask this audience tomorrow, let your legislators know that you are opposed to it also. A brief commentary and then your input. And you can call us at that point at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Every day of the week, I'm doing commentaries. And all this week, I'm doing commentaries on the economic coup d'etat in America. How in plain sight and not in secrecy, major elites with supporting organizations and federal agencies are taking power at every level. I will document my statements. I will only use their words exactly from transcripts and lectures to show you how it's being done, and no one on the left and no one on the right is challenging it. Now to the commentary. And many of you know my feelings on this already concerning the overdrugging of our children, since I've done a major film on it, and I have another one that's nearly complete. Today, the administration of psychoactive drugs to children, 6 years to 17 years, is all too common and growing at an alarming rate. These drugs often cause the opposite of the intended effect, often condoning the use by parents, by school teachers, by nurses, and then condemning by action the child to a life of misery and ill health. The prescription of these drugs is said to treat chemical imbalances, which were said to cause ADHD, depression, and bipolar disorder. It turns out, however, that what we are calling disease-causing chemical imbalances is simply a lie. The sad irony is the inappropriate use of these medications is in fact creating different chemical imbalances, which do cause mental disorders, many of which are both lifelong and debilitating. Furthermore, it is now clear that we often misdiagnose children, and as a result, then say that they have a mental disorder. But wait, children are supposed to be bursting with energy. They're not supposed to sit normally in a chair and not say anything. It's normal for teenagers to be moody and aloof. So this diagnosing is not only based upon this idea of chemical imbalances, which is a fraud, but also a general and pervasive notion that every non-acceptable behavior is due to mental illness. And last but certainly not least, the prescribing of these medications by doctors is based on the disinformation provided to them by the FDA and drug manufacturers and fraudulent studies and front groups, all in the name of making money on the backs of our children. In a recent lecture, respected journalist and writer and Nobel Peace Prize nominee Robert Whittaker highlighted not only the appallingly unscientific methodology used in the development and prescription use of psychoactive drugs in school-aged children, but also how hopelessly corrupt and failed the systems that should be regulating the safety of medicines are in this country. Unfortunately, many drug companies exist for one reason, to make money. As such, the people who run these companies have developed a worldwide effort to get everyone to take their drugs. Some drug company's success is not based upon a drug's usefulness or the safety of its product, but whether it makes money. The path to more money is simple. Find new uses for old drugs, invent new drugs, and find new markets for both new and old drugs. Unfortunately, children are today's newest market. The FDA requires a successful drug trial to approve new medications. Trial is often a misnomer, as the word implies some notion of impartiality and unknown outcome. These trials often are more like kangaroo courts. In one trial, in this case, to prove the usefulness of Prozac, corruption and dishonesty were the rule. Children who responded to placebos were removed from the data, as were negative responders that actually got sick taking the actual drug. This meant that the only children who were left in the study group were so-called positive responders. And even then, the researchers and doctors who researched were, in effect, funded by the makers of the drug Prozac, and were the very ones to decide which subjects, if any, actually did respond positively to the drug. This, of course, is a massive conflict of interest. The doctors, researchers, and drug companies all want the same thing: FDA approval to make more money. In an article published recently in perhaps the most prestigious medical journal, The Lancet, said that the trial studies used to provide proof of the usefulness of antidepressant drugs in children were, quote, nothing but fraudulent. I repeat, The Lancet said nothing but fraudulent. Following that assessment, all antidepressants but Prozac were banned in the UK for use in children. The fact that Prozac was not banned was based on very dubious, dishonest research. The true damage caused by the use of antidepressant drugs like Paxil, Zoloft, Prozac, Effexor, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors by school-aged children, is only found to be legitimate in nothing. I could find nothing. In one study, 25% of children who had been on the SSRIs for 3 years were re-diagnosed with a much more serious disorder, bipolar. They didn't have bipolar before. After taking the drugs, they became bipolar. This number increased to 50% after 6 years on the drugs. Long-term use of these antipsychotics leads to psychoses, diabetes, morbid obesity, and early death, and unfortunately, suicide. What should be a major concern, especially for parents, is the ever-widening definition of what constitutes a childhood mental disorder, a chemical imbalance. It is all nonsense. Children are children. It is normal for them to act out. It is normal for them to tell us what's on their mind, whether we want to hear it or not. And it's not normal for a child to act like a zombie. How in the world can a teacher feel that they're responsible when they're trying to compete with the overstimulated environment that a child is exposed to outside the classroom, inside the classroom, unless they recreate the curriculum, recreate the way teaching is done, smaller classes, more individual attention, instead of looking at giving each kid that acts out, doesn't keep up, is distracted, blurts out, sends them off to be labeled as chemically imbalanced and needing Ritalin or a drug. This has to stop at all levels. I haven't seen a single thing about this on Rachel Maddow, Keith Olbermann on the left, or anyone on the right, as if this isn't a problem. It is a major problem, far more significant than what Sarah Palin thinks or some of the other people in the media. And all of them are covering the same stories. It hasn't got by me, has it got by you, that virtually everyone on the left and right are covering the same stories every day, and the important issues are not covered at all. I'm Gary Nall. Those are my thoughts. What are yours? I'd like to hear from you now. As I believe in freedom of speech, and I believe that this radio program is the single most important open forum for independent and progressive minds in the world. Just look at the numbers. According to David Ide, in a letter sent that we posted on my website and Facebook, 10 million monthly listeners just over the Internet. I know of no other program that has those numbers on television or radio. And yet we seek no publicity, so we get no publicity. But people are listening, as well as the land-based stations as well, and a lot of new people who are listening. In fact, our largest 90% of all the people tuning in now, watching this program and listening, are people under the age of 30. And that's a good sign. And by the way, I have the latest statistics here, and I'm going to share this with you. I have the ratings. They keep bragging about how well they're doing. Bill O'Reilly, in the last year, you lost in 25 to 54-year-old group, 15%. Hannity, 19%. And Glenn Beck, 36% of your audience. So, before you brag about how well you're doing, why don't you take a look at the ratings? Now, we're going to go over and see what's on your mind later on. We're going to talk about medical myths with Dr. Martin Feldman. He'll be up. And I also have one other little commentary, short, and I'd like your address on this as well. I have a real powerful commentary for tomorrow. Please listen in. Quote, we need to be agitators. Norman Solomon, who appears on this station every week with his own show, said this. It is the agitator that gets the dirt out of the washing machine. And by the way, Jim Hightower also does a program on Progressive Radio Network, also said the same thing. Solomon sees the wash cycle as a good behavioral model for those of us who avoid political activism in favor of safe and lazy pondering over how much trouble the world is in right now. It's such a hassle to get involved with strangers and to go to meetings. We just whine to our friends about corporate greed and corruption, but we do so in the comfort of our own homes. We can become agitators. Quote, so much is at stake for future generations and for the planet that we need to be willing to organize as if our lives and the lives of those close to us depended upon it. And for those of us who turn off like a faucet, the mention of political activism, we do so at our own risk. Now, this afternoon I wrote for about 7 hours a commentary that will last for 5 days. I want you to know how serious the world of economic crisis is and who's behind it. I want you to know that behind this economic crisis, we are creating a police state. And it already is impinging upon our freedoms, and yet not a word do I hear from the left. I'm surprised and saddened. Intellectual elitism, kind of the snarly attitude that you're better and know better, well, pay attention because they're tapping your phones. Any and everything you do on a computer, a cell phone, they're aware of. Every organization you belong to, they know. And now they can deem terrorism by any subjective criteria they choose. How so? Listen to my commentaries. It is all based upon taking transcripts of their words to show you how bad it is. Let's go to the phones and see who's on the line and what your issues are. I'd be happy to address any issues, health, nutrition, anything else. Let's say hello now to Jim from Toronto. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I'd like to ask you about a problem I'm having with one of my legs. I was injured in an automobile accident.
Yes.
Okay, so I separated and fractured my left kneecap both at the same time, and I've had surgery. But unfortunately now the circulation to and from the knee, lower leg, and foot are not too good. So I was just wondering if you could give me any ideas what to do to improve the circulation.
Sure, I'd be happy to. First, get yourself two hard rubber balls. And every time you're seated, put your foot on the rubber balls and push down from the heel forward to the toe. So you go heel, toe, and over the ball of the foot. That's important because in the foot itself, from the toes back to the ball of the foot, clear back to the heel, you have sensory lines and nerves that go from the foot to different parts of the body. And those stimulate the energy. Then it also causes a constriction, relaxation of the blood vessels, which then acts as a pump to pump blood into the extremities. Then continue to stretch the legs as much as possible. People don't realize that when you're sitting and cross your legs, you're actually putting a tourniquet on the blood, the arteries that go down, and you don't want that. It'd be like taking a water hose and putting a crimp in it. So you want to keep your legs stretched as much as possible. You then want to use acupressure on acupressure points that will stimulate the flow of blood. Nutrients can also help. These are called oxidative nutrients, and such as dimethylglycine, DMG, and trimethylglycine at about 200 milligrams each, four times in a day. Vitamin E is mixed tocopherols and tocotrienols. At tocotrienols, 200 milligrams and or 200 units, and mixed tocopherols as vitamin E at about 800 units. I would also use coenzyme Q10, 300 or 400 milligrams twice a day, and NADH at 50 to 100 milligrams at the same time. They're co-catalysts along with coenzyme A at 100 milligrams at the same time. That will also help in the utilization of the mitochondria, which provide more energy so that this whole process can improve. And then the polyphenols. You can get those in, oh, let's say, green tea, white tea, black tea, oolong tea, red tea, 1,000 milligrams divided throughout the day. And then capsules will help you as well. All the best to you. Cayenne is also good, as is Feverfew and Ginkgo biloba, along with cayenne. Let's say hello to Vincent from New Jersey. Hi, Vincent.
Hi, Gary. Thank you, and great to talk to you. I have two questions, somewhat diverse, one of which has to do with cocoa butter. My wife recently substituted it for a coconut oil in a dessert recipe that she has, and we're just wondering about the health benefits of it compared to coconut oil or in general. And can I mention my second question?
Sure, go ahead.
The second question has to do with a fellow named Craig Venter. 60 Minutes did a spot on him, one of many over the years. I did one, I think, a week or two ago. He's the genomist, you know, in artificial life and that type of thing. And I was wondering if you're familiar with him, what you thought of his work. And
I'm sorry, I do not know a thing. I didn't see that piece of 60 Minutes, so I can't answer what I don't know about, and I won't.
Okay.
But on your first one, I'll be happy to adjust the concept. Cocoa butter is simply an emulsified form of a coconut oil. And if you put coconut oil in a refrigerator, it turns solid. If you put olive oil in a refrigerator, it turns solid. The coconut oil is your nutritionally viable form. And taking a tablespoon of organic raw coconut oil is terrific for getting anti-inflammatory, antiviral nutrients into the system. It also has a fat, and that is both a combination of long and short chain fatty acids, which are very beneficial for turning off inflammation in the arteries. So that's what I would recommend. For the external body, a coconut that has been in any way emulsified would be great for massaging into the scalp at night, especially the hair, and leaving it on all night and rinsing it in the morning. It's a great nutrient for the hair in the scalp. All the best to you. Let's say hello to Val from Brooklyn. Hi, Val.
Yes, hi, Daddy. Hello?
I'm here.
Okay. I was just diagnosed with ulcer, stomach ulcer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you have any protocol to treat it.
Yes, I do. First off, shouldn't you ask yourself why you got the stomach ulcer, the E. pylori?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
No, I don't have H. pylori.
Okay, so then you have a traditional ulcer. Did you ask yourself why?
Well, I try, but I don't have the answer to it.
Did you get any counseling?
Well, I've been just at the doctor's office, but I just was diagnosed 2 days ago, so.
All right. Well, what did the doctor say?
Well, the doctor just said that she thinks that I had the stress, and that's what create acidity, and that's why I got Olson.
There's a lot more to it than that. You could have a deficiency of zinc, of vitamin D, of calcium, of boron, which can also cause a lack of hydrochloric acid, which makes you more susceptible to ulcers. You could also have an increase in the acidity or the elevated, the lowered pH. You become too acid in your diet or the beverages you consume, which also can contribute, as well as different bacteria, like the E. pylori Helicobacter. But the way I go about it is the same no matter what the underlying cause. I first start by trying to turn off inflammation. By turning off inflammation, raw cabbage juice, 3 pints a day, raw organic cabbage juice. Then I follow that with quercetin and vitamin C taken at the same time in buffered form with aloe vera, whole leaf aloe vera, at 4 ounces 3 times a day. I add into that a high quality, probably 5 to 8 billion good natural probiotics. That also is important. Glutamine is important, generally 3,000 milligrams. And all that helps with the stomach, as well as marshmallow root and fennel and anise and cinnamon. Cinnamon being the finest, most powerful healing agent for ulcers. So that's what I do. All the best to you, and you should pay attention now and get yourself some stress management.
Thank you very much, Gary.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, come back, and speak with the doctor about dispelling myths, and I still have a commentary I want to share with you. Stay with us. Everyone, we're broadcasting all over the world. I want to thank all of you for tuning in. We have a lot to share with you. We're going to talk about medical myths and dispelling them in a moment, but a little bit more on our environmental issues. This is from Alternate, from Mononen Rosal, and it says, if you knew how dangerous green cleaning products were, you'd probably go back to soap and water. I'll quote this because this ties in with something I said earlier. They're hiding under your sink, deep in the basement, and out in your garage. They seem to be multiplying, and most of them are green. They're cleaning products. We have one for every conceivable job. Floors, walls, dishes, laundry, windows, bathroom, porcelain, and ceramic tiles. Wooden decks and cement surfaces, silverware. One for car paint, another for chrome, and on and on. Whatever happened to just plain soap? Well, it seems it wasn't fast enough for our busy lives. And these cleaners certainly are fast. Just spray and wipe and wish with a mop and the job is done. If you want really fast general cleaning products, commercials like Formula 409 and Simply Green and Windex clean faster than any soap and water could. This is because they contain small amounts, usually in the range of 2 to 6%, of some members of the most powerful grease-cutting class of chemicals known, the glycol ethers. Now, many people have heard of glycols, a class of chemicals used in antifreeze solutions in your car's rear radiator. Others may remember that the ethers are either used in as anesthetics in the early 1900s, but the glycol ethers are not at all like those glycols. Glycol ethers are in a class of their own. Everyone has been exposed to these. You can't possibly have escaped. They're in paints, varnishes, stains, inks, brake fluids, perfumes, cosmetics, and, of course, cleaning products. They mix with water, and many water-based cleaners and paints contain them. Heavy overexposure to the glycols can cause anemia, intoxication, irritation of the eyes and nose. In laboratory animals, low levels of exposure to some of these have been shown to cause birth defects and can damage a male's sperm and testicles. Some of the common glycols haven't been studied for reproductive hazards or even cancer. But there's enough data for the New Jersey Department of Health to state on its fact sheet that the most commonly used glycol ethers, quote, may be a carcinogen in humans since it has been shown to cause liver cancer in animals. I agree. You're exposed to the glycol ethers when you inhale them as the cleaner is used. If the cleaner does not have a lot of perfumes or odorants, you know you are exposed because you can smell the chemical. If there are strong perfumes, the odor of the glycol ethers can be covered so that the water-based cleaner appears to have no chemical solvents in it at all. And while you're inhaling them, you also may be exposed to another well. Most of the glycols can silently penetrate your skin and enter your bloodstream without altering or damaging your skin or causing pain. If that were not enough, the glycols also go through natural rubber gloves and many types of plastic gloves without changing their appearance. So while you're cleaning, you're being exposed both by inhaling the vapors as the cleaner evaporates and by exposure through your skin, even if you're wearing gloves. These are reasons why even 2-6% of these chemicals commonly in cleaning products can be significant. The glycols are related to each other in a single chemical class. There are hundreds of them, and that's the danger. My suggestion, read the labels. If they have them, don't use them. Let's go over and say hello to my guest standing by, Dr. Martin Feldman. He is board certified in neurology and a holistic doctor.
Hi, Gary.
Hi, Marty.
We're going to talk about myths tonight, as you mentioned. And the myth of the evening is this, that hypoglycemia is not a proven illness and therefore is not important and should not be dealt with. This is a conventional approach. I often see patients coming to me with hypoglycemia or glucose instability syndrome, another way to put it. And I might talk to their internal medicine doctor and we discuss it. And they say, well, it's not proven and don't bother me with this. And it's their mythology prevents them from doing the right medical treatment. Now, what do we do about hypoglycemia? First off, we have to diagnose it, and that's a little complex because if you just take a glucose level at one moment in time, the moment that the blood was taken out of your arm, and you get a glucose level, it's just that one moment. But hypoglycemia is ongoing in that the glucose level throughout the day may vary greatly, and especially if it falls down or gets too low, then you might get episodic symptoms. The key to this illness is episodic symptoms. The episodic symptom is usually because the brain requires glucose as its main fuel. So as the glucose level is erratic, the brain becomes erratic, but eventually the body kind of fixes itself. Glucose gets back to normal, and the hypoglycemia improves. About half of the people with this condition do figure out they have a hypoglycemic food issue, and they walk around with food, like walnuts or almonds, many people walk around with. Or they've learned that they just go somewhere quickly and eat, and they get better. But 50% of the people walking around have no idea what's going on. Some of these symptoms that are episodic might be low concentration, low brain fog, that brain fog that just comes and goes, headaches that come and go, a feeling of being down that comes and goes, or any brain-related issue that comes and goes. And what do we do about this? Well, in England, they have tea time about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They eat lunch maybe 12, 1 o'clock. Tea time in England has usually true tea with caffeine, and that does stimulate the adrenals, and that can fix a hypoglycemic issue. The adrenals are very important in this homeostatic mechanism that we're going to mention, so that tea time may be a hypoglycemic treatment. But what do we do for day-to-day issues here? Well, we first have to understand that this is a thermostat problem. The thermostat that regulates the glucose level minute by minute is faulty. And what are the thermostat parts, let's say the component parts? They are the adrenals, pancreas, and the liver. Those three are in charge of your glucose level. Pancreas has a lot to do with glucose level directly with insulin. The liver has glycogen storage, which has a direct effect on your levels. The adrenal has hormones, which also affect the glucose level very profoundly. So the point is to repair the thermostat. Now, in all the books on nutritional therapy, they mention eat small and high-protein frequent meals. Now, that does improve the condition somewhat in that you do feel better, but it's not the way to deal with it. The way to deal with it is to get the thermostat back on track and not be a, the problem with having those meals all the time. So what do? First, we have to fix the pancreatic part, and that involves usually zinc, chromium, manganese, and B-complex, four basic nutrients. Most of the time, people coming to me with hypoglycemic glucose instability require those four as the beginning step A1. Zinc, at least 50 milligrams commonly. Chromium, at least 400 mcg commonly. Manganese, at least 10 milligrams commonly. This is not magnesium, but manganese, often overlooked. And B-complex, easily 150 a day or even more. Then the next step would be herbal, which is a little bit more involved. Each person has a different herbal need. And another thing would be a homeopathic sarcode. A sarcode is a homeopathic remedy that will repair, in this case, adrenal or pancreas, or even liver. And what do we do about adrenal itself? Well, we have very, very good non-drug adrenal repair. Vitamin C especially, pantothenic acid, DGL, rhodiola herb, and again, homeopathic sarcode. And then the next thing would be the liver itself and detoxification, which you're the master, one of the masters in the world on detoxification therapies, and all the health support groups do go through heavy detoxification as a major part of their health support. That gets the liver back on track, helps the hypoglycemia a great, great deal. Testing is complicated because you have to get multiple glucose levels, and you'd have to catch a low glucose by chance because it's very erratic minute by minute throughout the day. Occasionally, we have a HGB-A1C level, which is too low. Almost always HGB-A1C is tested for diabetes for it to be too high. But occasionally, I'll see a patient with hypoglycemia, and the HGB-A1C is too low. And then it's always of interest, if the adrenal is suspect, to do a DHEAS-S test, which is an adrenal output. So we have here a myth whereby it's not appreciated by the conventional doctors because they, first off, don't see it in the blood report because you're only getting glucose at one moment in time. Second, they don't think it's important, but the key to this is this. Although it's a big nuisance, beyond that, I've seen patients come to me after 5 to 10 years being on a non-corrected hypoglycemic story, and they develop diabetes. This is a precursor to diabetes. It has to have more respect by the conventional medical doctors, and certainly the audience out there should be checked for hypoglycemia and be concerned to fix it.
Thank you very much. Dr. Martin Feldman is available at 212-744-4413. So let's just summarize a few things. Go back to soap and water. Get rid of all the antibacterials. Spray around your house or office or classroom with air therapies from citrus that kill virus and bacteria. Wipe down several times a day surface areas that other people have touched that could be infecting you with simple wet paper towel with alcohol. It's real easy. Take your vitamin D between 2,000 to 4,000 units a day. Take your other nutrients as well. Get on a simple diet, and it's been shown to help prevent colorectal cancer and also help you with all other conditions. These are not difficult issues to deal with. If you missed anything, you can go to GaryNoll.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and listen to the archives. Now, for the remainder of our program, I'm going to take some calls. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And we'll also, while you're waiting here to call me in, let's go over and say hello to Michael Rupert, who is standing by, and he's going to bring us up to date on what he's going to be doing in his program, which follows this. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Gary. How are you doing?
Doing great.
Tonight, listen, the world's had just a hell of a week. It's just been a really bad week for the whole planet. So we're going to talk about some of the things that are shaping up and crystallizing around the world, and they're all pretty serious right now. I encourage your listeners to hang over just to hear the news at least. We have two great guests, Carolyn Baker, my old friend, PhD, author, and just great writer, and one who talks about dealing with collapse from the gut, and Michael Brownlee, one of the pioneers in the Transition Movement U.S. He's the founder of Transition Colorado and was deeply involved in the creation of the Transition Movement here. The general subject, and it's not just with Transition Towns, it's all over the movement, is are you better off dealing with what's happening around the world now just from your head, or from your head and your gut at the same time?
That sounds very interesting. By the way, this week, Michael, each day, I'm going to be having Chris Hedge is on, Joe Salonte on, a lot of heavyweights on, David DeGraw, Michael Hudson, because many of us believe that the evidence is overwhelming, hard prima facie evidence, that there is an economic coup d'etat which has occurred in the United States and worldwide by major financial institutions, by the Federal Reserve, and those people who would we would call our economic elite. They've used the political elite and the media elite and others to do this, and they have been benefited by $13.3 trillion directly, while the American public and the working middle class have been just decimated.
I would look at it just a hair differently and say that it's not a coup d'etat in that these people just took over. I think these people have been running things for a long time, but a collapsing civilization is revealing the nakedness with which they have ruled and the ruthlessness which with which they will do anything to hold on to power.
I would agree with that. I'm not suggesting it's anything new. I'm only suggesting that at this point, it's all out in the open because virtually everything in my commentaries this week are taken verbatim from discussions between between these people at the G20 summit, at the Council on Foreign Relations.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The people who attended Bilderberg and then came directly from Bilderberg to end up at the most powerful central bank, the banker central bank, in Geneva, and how these people end up manipulating to get the banks that made the bad debts their money back, but never the people, and then the people end up with structural adjustments. So what we saw in Asia, in Africa, in South America from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and 90s, we are now going to see in the United States, England, France, Germany, Italy, Portugal, and Spain in the next 3 years. And there's going to be riots. I believe there's going to be civil war. I believe that we will see.
It's all coming.
And but it won't be from the left. The left doesn't ever do a damn thing except sit around, look in the mirror, and ask itself why it seems to be better than everyone else. It won't come from the right. They're incapable. And also, they're pro-corporation. It won't come from the Tea Parties because they were co-opted by, at least a substantial amount of them, were co-opted by the Sarah Palins, who are corporatists. The interesting thing, those poor Tea Party people just got the con job of the century.
Mm-hmm.
The very people they're supporting are all part of the problem. It's going to come from the working class. And the working class are armed, angry, and when they, I'm predicting this because I'm all over America with this new film on Poverty Inc., and everywhere I go, they hate anything that represents power.
We're going to talk about that and a lot more when we start my show just any second now.
Great. Thanks, to have you on. We look forward to listening to your program. Michael Rupert coming up in about 20 seconds. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. And go to our call to action. You'll see us fighting Senate Bill 510. You'll see us fighting genetic engineering. You'll see us fighting mandatory vaccines. If there's one place where progressive minds go to each day, it's the Progressive Radio Network. More people listening, more people going there, the fastest growing internet radio program and station in the world by a measure. Last week we had a 16% increase in audience. The week before, 32%. These are numbers that are just mind-boggling. Have a nice day.